Now we will begin Part A with the first conversation. Number one.
Tina says you won't be able to make it to the meeting tomorrow evening.
Yeah, sorry about that. I just found out I have to work overtime.
What does the man mean? Number two.
Would you mind taking a picture of me in front of the fountain?
Not at all, but I'm not sure how this camera works.
What will probably happen next? Number three.
Oh my goodness. Your health services card is sitting right here in your file. It should have been sent out to you weeks ago. I hope you haven't had any need for it.
No, not yet. But it's nice to know I have it, so I don't need to reapply.
What does the man mean? Number four.
Excuse me, Professor Andrews, but I'm still confused. Could you go over that last point one more time?
Of course. That's what I'm here for.
What does the woman mean? Number five.
I'm sorry I made you wait. The bus was stuck in traffic and took forever to get here.
No harm done. I was able to catch up on some reading.
What can be inferred from the conversation? Number six.
That's a really nice raincoat, Lisa.
Thanks. I like it, too. If only it had a heavy lining, so I could wear it in winter, too.
What does the woman mean? Number seven.
I just heard the news that Mary won the election. That must be a big disappointment for you.
Well, actually, she probably was the best candidate this time around, and I can always run again next year.
What does the woman imply? Number eight.
Do you have your film festival schedule with you? I'd like to find out what's playing this weekend.
I passed it on to my roommate, but there should be more at the bookstore. I can pick one up for you next time I'm there.
What does the man offer to do? Number nine.
My new neighbor next door is really great. She's got this fantastic collection of classical music. I mean, dozens of composers I've never even heard of.
Just be careful, Annie. A hobby like that can be contagious and expensive.
What does the man imply? Number 10.
The bus they're renting to take us to the museum? It's going to leave at 10 in front of the library. So let's meet on the library steps beforehand, okay?
Oh, I thought I told you. I have a dentist appointment this morning. So I'm just going to meet up with you guys downtown at the museum, okay?
What does the woman imply? Number 11.
Gee, you have a lot of change in that jar. Are you a coin collector?
No, I'm just saving them for a rainy day.
What does the woman mean? Number 12.
I saw you in the lecture hall yesterday, on your way out of Professor Warner's philosophy class. I was kind of surprised. I didn't imagine you as someone interested in philosophy.
I don't know what's so surprising. There's lots of engineering students in that class.
What can be inferred about the man? Number 13.
Did I hear that right? Our reports are due next Friday?
Just the introduction. The rest we'll find out about today in class.
What does the woman mean? Number 14.
This painting would go great in my room, but they want $30 for it, and it's probably mostly for the frame.
Then why don't you see if they'll sell it separately?
What does the woman suggest the man do? Number 15.
Dr. Smith, this is Ann Crowley. Those stretching exercises you recommended are really helping with my back pain, but the pills you prescribed, I think they're giving me a headache.
That's not unusual. Let's try cutting back to just one a day, all right?
What does the man suggest the woman do? Number 16.
Congratulations, Tom. I hear you got a job with the Wilson Company.
Thanks, Professor Cohn, but it's a little too soon for congratulations. All I got so far is an interview, early next week, on Tuesday.
What does the man imply? Number 17.
I'm never going to volunteer to help Janet with a party again.
I know what you mean. We ended up doing most of the cleanup.
What can be inferred about the party? Number 18.
This is a pretty small room to be sharing with someone. Don't you find it a little crowded?
Well, I don't know about my roommate, but me, I'm used to it being a little cramped. I grew up with six brothers, remember?
What does the man mean? Number 19.
Excuse me, do you know what time the train to Middletown leaves?
You mean left. The last one was at 11 p.m. And that's it, till tomorrow morning.
What can be inferred from the conversation? Number 20.
I'm thinking about wearing a suit to the party tonight. What do you think?
Well, I hadn't heard anything about dressing up. I'll bet a sweater will be fine.
What does the woman suggest the man do? Go on to the next page. Number 21.
If you see your friend Julia in the next couple of days, would you mind asking her to give me a call? I was hoping she'd be able to help out with course registrations next week.
Sure, Professor Gordon, if I see her. She's made herself pretty scarce lately.
What does the woman mean? Number 22.
I've never seen a larger collection of this author's books than the one here in this library. It's impressive how many she managed to write in her lifetime.
Yeah, actually a lot more than even this collection would suggest.
What does the man imply about the author's books? Number 23.
My boss keeps asking me to work overtime, and I've always said no because I don't want to jeopardize my studies, but I'm starting to waver.
I wouldn't give in if I were you.
What does the woman mean? Number 24.
What's keeping Kevin? He said last night that he'd meet us here by 2 o'clock, and it's already 2:30.
This is so typical of him, isn't it? Just watch. He's going to show up in 5 minutes with some wild excuse.
What does the woman mean? Number 25.
Wow. Are all those books you've got there required for the modern European history course?
No, a lot of these are listed as optional. But you know me, when I do something, I do it 200%.
What does the man mean? Number 26.
Let's go to a movie after dinner.
That's tempting. However, the tennis tournament's tomorrow, and I need to get in a short practice session tonight.
What will the woman probably do this evening? Number 27.
I just got this car, and already it's falling apart. First one of the door handles fell off, and now the inside light won't go on when you open the door.
Hey, what's the big deal? Falling apart is when your car needs a new engine, like mine does.
What does the woman imply? Number 28.
Oh, Mrs. Wilson? Now that classes are starting again, I could probably keep working the front desk here if you'd be willing to give me a flexible schedule and let me come in and work between classes. I really would like to stay.
And we'd like that, too. Trouble is, that'd mean the front desk wouldn't always be covered, and, well, a hotel just can't operate that way.
What does the woman mean? Number 29.
You didn't care for the movie, did you?
You can say that again.
What does the man mean?
Number 30. That grade on my philosophy paper, it really took me by surprise. You know, I worked hard and everything, but I never thought I'd get such a high grade. I mean, she actually gave me an A.
Well, look, Professor Lane is fair, but I wouldn't call her overly charitable, so you really have yourself to thank.
What does the woman mean? This is the end of Part A. Go on to the next page. Now read along as the directions for Part B are being read. The test continues on side two. Part B. Directions. In this part of the test, you will hear longer conversations. After each conversation, you will hear several questions. The conversations and questions will not be repeated. After you hear a question, read the four possible answers in your test book and choose the best answer. Then, on your answer sheet, find the number of the question and fill in the space that corresponds to the letter of the answer you have chosen. Remember, you are not allowed to take notes or write in your test book. Go on to the next page. Now we will begin Part B with the first conversation. Questions 31 through 35. Listen to two friends preparing dinner.
We're almost finished. Could you hand me the white pepper?
Why white pepper and not black? Aren't they the same thing?
Well, they're from the same plant, but white pepper is milder. I usually prefer it. It has a more subtle flavor.
How? If they're from the same plant?
Well, it sort of depends on how ripe it is when it's picked. You sure ask a lot of questions.
That's because you have all the answers. Did you learn about this stuff in cooking school?
Yeah. We studied all kinds of herbs and spices.
So go on. It's interesting. How do we get black pepper, then?
Well, the peppercorn is actually a fruit. It grows on vines. And it's not really black or white. It turns from green to yellow to red as it ripens. For black pepper, you pick it when it's still a little immature, and then it's dried.
Drying darkens it?
Well, the skin turns dark as it dries.
Does that mean white pepper is pepper without the skin?
Exactly. It's put out to dry in the sun after the skin's been rubbed off. It's also matured a little longer than black pepper.
So they do all that just to get a milder peppercorn?
That, and for aesthetic reasons. Some chefs like the idea that it keeps white sauces white.
These green peppercorns are interesting. I've never seen them before.
Green pepper has a very distinctive flavor. Some people really like it.
So it must get picked when it's really young.
Right. And it's not sun-dried. It's either put in a liquid or freeze-dried to keep its color.
Well, you're quite the pepper expert, aren't you?
A good chef got to know about spices.
I'll be the judge of that. Let me taste. Mmm. You pass.
Number 31. What are the speakers mainly discussing? Number 32. How did the man learn about pepper? Number 33. What happens to black pepper after it is picked? Number 34. According to the man, why do some cooks prefer white pepper?
number 35. Why does the woman tell the man that he passes? Questions 36 through 38. Listen to a conversation between two students.
I didn't see you in creative writing class today. What happened?
Oh, just a dentist appointment, that's all. Say, did we get a new assignment for next week?
Yeah, a really interesting one, actually. We're supposed to write a short story that has some sort of limitation or constraint imposed on it.
What do you mean? Like rhyming in a poem?
Well, that's the idea, but what we write has to be prose as opposed to poetry. Just making it rhyme would be too easy, I guess. I think Professor Kraft really wants us to challenge ourselves, to put our creativity to the test.
Well, did she give any sort of hint about what she has in mind?
Not really, but I may have an idea of the kind of thing she's looking for. I just finished reading this really strange book by some French guy. He wrote the whole thing without ever using the letter E.
A whole book without a single E? How's that possible? But wait a minute. I didn't know you could read French.
I can't. I read the English translation. But get this. There's not one E in that either.
No way. Think of all the words you couldn't use.
I know, but that translator managed it. I've got the book at home if you want to check it out for yourself. What's really amazing to me is that leaving out the E in English has got to involve a completely different group of words and endings than in French. It's really mind-boggling.
Well, sometime you'll have to show me that book, but right now I'd better get going on this writing for next week. I've already had a couple of ideas, thanks to you, and I think I just might be able to work one of them into something interesting.
Number 36. What were the students assigned to write? Number 37. Why does the man mention a book by a French author? Number 38. What point do the speakers make about the letter E? This is the end of Part B. Go on to the next page. Now read along as the directions for Part C are being read. Part C. Directions. In this part of the test, you will hear several short talks. After each talk, you will hear some questions. The talks and the questions will not be repeated. After you hear a question, read the four possible answers in your test book and choose the best answer. Then, on your answer sheet, find the number of the question and fill in the space that corresponds to the letter of the answer you have chosen. Here is an example. On the recording, you hear, listen to an instructor talk to his class about a television program.
I'd like to tell you about an interesting TV program that'll be shown this coming Thursday. It'll be on from 9 to 10 p.m. on Channel 4. It's part of a series called Mysteries of Human Biology. And the subject of the program is the human brain, how it functions and how it can malfunction. Topics that will be covered are dreams, memory, and depression. These topics are illustrated with outstanding computer animation that makes the explanations easy to follow. Make an effort to see this show. Since we've been studying the nervous system in class, I know you'll find it very helpful.
Now listen to a sample question. What is the main purpose of the program? In your test book, you read, A, to demonstrate the latest use of computer graphics. B. To discuss the possibility of an economic depression. C. To explain the workings of the brain. D. to dramatize a famous mystery story. The best answer to the question, what is the main purpose of the program, is C, to explain the workings of the brain. Therefore, the correct choice is C. Now listen to another sample question. Why does the speaker recommend watching the program? In your test book, you read, A. It is required of all science majors. B. It will never be shown again. C. It can help viewers improve their memory skills. D. It will help with coursework. The best answer to the question, why does the speaker recommend watching the program, is D. It will help with coursework. Therefore, the correct choice is D. Remember, you are not allowed to take notes or write in your test book. Go on to the next page. Now we will begin Part C with the first talk. Questions 39 through 42. Listen to part of a lecture in a physical geography class.
We only have a few minutes left, so I'd like to go over a couple of points before we move on. Remember that although there are both horizontal and vertical movements of air, the term wind is applied only to horizontal movements, and that more air is involved in those horizontal movements than in vertical movements. And what causes these horizontal movements? Ultimately, it's solar radiation, because the unequal heating of the Earth and the atmosphere produces horizontal differences in air pressure. These differences set winds in motion. Essentially, winds are nature's way of balancing out the uneven distribution of air pressure over the Earth. Secondly, let me repeat my answer to the question we had before about wind direction. Many people get confused by what they hear in weather forecasts. We talk about wind direction in terms of where the wind's coming from, not where it's blowing to. There's a good reason for this. To weather forecasters, the origin of the wind is more important than its destination. The wind's origin helps them predict the weather. Logically, in the northern hemisphere, a north wind tends to bring colder weather, and a south wind, warmer weather. I haven't forgotten vertical movements of air, but we don't have time today to talk about them in depth. In our next class, then, I'll begin by discussing updrafts and downdrafts and how they affect the weather. I suspect most of you can guess which of the two brings warm weather and which brings cold.
Number 39. According to the speaker, how is wind defined? Number 40. Why does the speaker mention solar radiation? Number 41. According to the speaker, which weather forecast information can be confusing? Number 42. What will the speaker probably discuss in the next class? Questions 43 through 46. Listen to part of a talk in a psychology class.
Some of the most practical lessons coming out of research in psychology are in the area of memory. People ask, why can't I remember that term from the physics chapter or the date my library book is due? Well, for a lot of people, memory may be weak because they don't use it enough. It's like a muscle. If you don't exercise it, it won't stay strong. That's why it's important to keep our minds active, to keep on learning throughout our lives. We can do this by reading, playing memory games, and seeking out new experiences. It's my guess, though, that the lack of mental stimulation is not a problem for students like you. More likely, the lives you all live are so busy and stimulating that this in itself may sometimes interfere with learning. Later on, we'll be discussing how information is recalled from memory. But first, the information needs to be recorded. In other words, learned. And for busy people like you and me, that's where the real problem often lies. If we're distracted or we're trying to think about what we're going to do next, the incoming message just might not be getting recorded effectively. And that leads to the first tip for students who want to improve their memories. Give your full attention to the information you hope to retain. Research clearly shows the advantages of this, and also of active learning, of consciously trying to visualize a new fact, perhaps to make a mental picture, even a wildly ridiculous one, so the new fact will stick in memory. Let me illustrate that for you here a little more concretely.
Number 43. What is the talk mainly about? Number 44. What does the speaker illustrate with the example of a muscle? Number 45. What does the speaker suggest students do to learn new information more effectively? Number 46. What will the speaker probably do next? Questions 47 through 50. Listen to part of a talk in a biology class. The professor is discussing insect behavior.
Today, we're going to continue our discussion of social insects, focusing on the Argentine ant, which, as you might guess, is a species of ant that's native to Argentina. We'll consider what happened to this type of ant after some members of the species moved to California from their original habitat. Okay. Well, in Argentina, these Argentine ants behave like most ant species around the world. They fight other ants of the same species if those ants are from some other nest. But the Argentine ants living in California behave differently. Ants from different nests form a single large colony. Within this colony, there is little aggression among ants from different nests. And when they fight insects from outside their colony, the Argentine ants can quickly recruit a huge army from their network of nests. This, of course, gives them an advantage over other ant species. So then, why do Argentine ants behave differently in California than they do in Argentina? Well, using genetic testing, researchers found that all the Argentine ants in California were very similar genetically. You see, when the first Argentine ants came to California, their population must have been very small, and all the later generations of Argentine ants there must be descended from the same few ancestors. So they are all closely related. This discovery is important because, for most social insects, membership in a colony is based on how closely related they are genetically.
Number 47. What aspect of Argentine ants is mainly discussed?